Okay, so you guys are really digging into what makes some jobs pay more than others. Looks like you've sent us some really interesting stuff on earnings and discrimination.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic.
For sure. And we've got some great material to work with today.
We do.
An excerpt from that economics textbook.
EC 140, right.
Yeah, chapter 19, the one focusing on equilibrium wages and discrimination. And we've also got that Bloomberg opinion piece by Noah Smith. He's advocating for more education spending, which is always.
Always a hot topic.
It is. So our mission, should we choose to accept it?
I think we should.
Okay, good. It's to help you understand not just what factors influence earnings, but the why behind
The
them.
why is key.
Yeah. And what it all means for us, for society.
Right, because ultimately this affects everyone.
Big time. So the textbook starts with this pretty eye-opening example. The average U.S. physician makes like $215,000 a year.
A police officer, about $65,000. And a fast food cook, only $22,000.
Whoa. Huge difference, right? So is it all about like hard work?
Well, that's what we're going to unpack. Economists actually have a few theories about why wages differ so much. One of them is this thing called compensating differentials.
Compensating what now?
Compensating differentials. Basically, it means that sometimes higher pay isn't just about skills, it's about offsetting the less desirable parts of a job.
Okay, give me an example.
Would you rather be a garbage collector or a beach badge checker for the same pay?
Tough choice, but probably the beach, yeah.
Right. So the garbage collector needs to be paid more to make up for the downsides of the job.
Makes sense. But what about those bigger differences, like between someone with a college degree and someone who just finished high school?
That's where the concept of human capital comes in. Think of education and experience as investments in your earning potential.
Okay, so the more you invest, the more you're worth.
Exactly. Like college grads in the US earn almost twice as much as those with only a high school diploma.
Oh, almost twice as much, huh?
Yeah. And that gap's even bigger in less developed countries. But here's the thing, even with all these factors, economists can only explain about half the variation in wages.
Really? Half. So what about the other half? What's going on there?
It could be natural ability, you know, how much effort someone puts in, even plain luck.
So like two people with the same resume could end up with totally different salaries because one is just, I don't know, better at their job or got lucky.
It happens more than you'd think, and this is where Noah Smith's argument for investing in education comes in, especially for those from disadvantaged backgrounds.
Right, he's saying we should basically throw money at education. And he points to research showing that a 10% increase in education spending can actually lead to longer time in school, higher wages, less poverty. Pretty compelling stuff.
Definitely. And he connects this need for more education spending to two big trends. One is globalization.
Yeah, we import stuff made with less skilled labor and export things that need, you know, higher skills.
Exactly. And the other is this thing called skill bias, technological change.
Okay, break that one down for me.
Think about social media. Brand new industry, didn't exist 20 years ago. Now there are social media managers everywhere, and they need specific skills for that.
Right, so technology is replacing some jobs, but also creating new ones that need like different skills.
Exactly. It's changing the whole landscape of work.
Okay, so education seems super important, but hold on. The textbook also brings up something kind of surprising, Beauty. Are you saying looks can actually affect how much you earn?
Well, studies have shown that attractive people do tend to earn more, like 5% above average. And average-looking folks make 5 to 10% more than those considered less attractive.
Seriously. So is it just that people are nicer to good-looking people or what?
Well, it could be a few things. I mean, some jobs do value attractiveness,
Not
sure.
like modeling or acting, yeah.
But it could also be that attractive people are just better at, you know, presenting themselves or communicating. Those are valuable skills in a lot of fields.
So it's not about the looks themselves, but what those looks might signal, like confidence or competence. But let's be honest, couldn't it also be plain old discrimination?
We can't rule that out, and we'll definitely dive into that more later. But even with education, there's more to it than meets the eye. Remember that signaling theory?
Yeah, the idea that a degree is more about showing you're smart and capable than actually making you more productive.
Right. So maybe it's not that you learned a ton of useful stuff in college, but that you proved you can stick with something tough and finish it.
Like a giant expensive IQ test.
Exactly. And that has huge implications for education policy.
Hmm.
If signaling is the main thing, then just pushing more people to get degrees might not actually solve the problem.
Makes you wonder what we should be focusing on then, credentials or actual skills?
That's the big question. And speaking of big questions, the textbook also talks about why some professions have superstars with crazy high earnings, while others don't.
Okay, yeah, like movie stars and athletes making millions, why them and not, like superstar plumbers?
Two main conditions. First, everyone wants the best, whether it's the best actor or the best athlete. And second, the best can supply to everyone pretty easily.
So movies and music reach millions of people instantly.
Exactly. But a plumber can only serve so many clients.
No matter how good they are at unclogging drains.
Right. So it's talent, demand, and reach that create those superstar incomes. But not all wages are set by just the market, you know. There are other things that can push wages up, too.
Like minimum wage laws.
Exactly. Especially for those at the lower end of the pay scale.
Makes sense. What else?
Labor unions. They bargain for higher wages and better working conditions for their members.
So they use their collective power to push wages up.
Yep. And then there's this thing called efficiency wages.
Okay, I've never heard of that one.
It's where companies voluntarily pay more than they have to.
Wait, why would they do that?
Because they think it'll benefit them in the long run. Higher wages can attract better workers, reduce turnover, boost morale, all that good stuff.
So it's like investing in their workforce.
Exactly. But when wages are pushed higher than that natural equilibrium point, it can lead to some unintended consequences.
Like what?
Well, one potential consequence is unemployment.
Because if the price of labor goes up, companies will hire fewer people, right?
Exactly. It's all connected. And that brings us to a big topic that we can't ignore, discrimination.
Yeah, the textbook lays out some pretty stark statistics about the differences in earnings between racial and gender groups.
Big disparities that are hard to explain away by just market forces, you know?
Absolutely. So we're talking about, like, the median black man earning less than the median white man, and black women earning even less than white women.
Exactly. And those disparities hold true within genders, too, by the way.
Meaning white women earn less than white men, and black women earn less than black men.
You got it. It's a complex issue, and we have to be careful about attributing all of it to discrimination, of course.
Right, because there are all those other factors we talked about, like education levels and experience.
Right. For example, public schools in predominantly black areas have historically been underfunded compared to schools in predominantly white areas.
Which can then affect their job prospects down the road.
Exactly. It's a chain reaction. And women are more likely to interrupt their careers to take care of family, which can also affect their earnings later on.
So many pieces to this puzzle. But even with all that said, the textbook doesn't let employers off the hook completely when it comes to discrimination, right?
Oh, not at all. They highlight that Emily and Lakeisha study, for instance.
The one where researchers sent out resumes with different names but identical qualifications, and the white-sounding names got way more calls back.
That's the one. It shows how unconscious bias can really affect hiring decisions.
Yeah. Even when everything else is the same, the name alone made a difference. Crazy. But then the textbook makes this interesting argument that, in some cases, market forces can actually work against discrimination.
They do. It's like, imagine a bunch of firms are biased against blondes, so blondes get paid less.
Okay, I'm following.
Now, a savvy entrepreneur comes along and decides to hire only blondes. Because they're cheaper, right?
I see where you're going with this. They can offer their products or services at a lower price and undercut the competition.
Exactly. If customers care more about price than hair color, those discriminating firms are in trouble.
So the profit motive can actually incentivize businesses to be less discriminatory.
In theory, yes. But the real world's not always so simple. There are a couple of things that can get in the way.
Like what?
Well, sometimes customer preference can actually support discrimination. If people prefer to be served by, say, brunettes, and they're willing to pay more for that, then the market won't necessarily eliminate the bias.
So if the customers themselves are biased, it throws a wrench in the whole system.
Yep. And then there's government policy. The textbook gives this example of segregated streetcars in the early 1900s.
Oh.
The streetcar companies actually often opposed those laws. Not because they were morally against segregation, but because it cost them money. Having separate cars for different races meant running more cars, which hurt their profits.
So the government actually got in the way of market forces that might have helped reduce discrimination.
That's right. And we see similar things happening today.
Like with those ban the box laws.
Exactly. They're meant to help people with criminal records get jobs, but they might unintentionally lead to more statistical discrimination. If employers can't ask about criminal history, They might avoid hiring people from groups that are statistically more likely to have records, even if the individual applicant is totally clean.
It's like those policies designed to help can actually end up hurting the very people they're trying to help.
It happens more than we'd like to think.
Oh.
And speaking of unintended consequences, professional sports offers a really interesting case study in discrimination.
Oh, yeah. Why is that?
Because in sports, performance is pretty easy to measure, right? So it's harder to hide bias.
Yeah, the stats don't lie.
Exactly. But even so, studies have found that Black players in basketball, for example, are paid less than white players with comparable skills.
Really? Even though their performance is objectively similar?
That's what the research suggests. And get this, teams with more white players actually had higher attendance.
Wait, so not only are Black players being paid less, but fans actually prefer teams with more white players.
That's what the data shows. And similar patterns have been found in baseball, although it's less pronounced now than it used to be.
Wow. You'd think in a field like sports where talent is so obvious, that kind of discrimination wouldn't exist.
You would, but it's there. And it's not always about outright prejudice either. Sometimes it's this more subtle thing called statistical discrimination.
Okay, what's that?
It's where employers use group averages or stereotypes to make decisions when they don't have a lot of information about individual candidates, even if those stereotypes are wrong.
So, like, if an employer thinks blue-eyed people are less punctual, they might be less likely to hire a blue-eyed person, even if that person is always on time.
Exactly. It's about judging someone based on their group rather than on their individual merits.
That doesn't seem fair at all.
It isn't. And those ban-the-box laws are a perfect example of how even well-intentioned policies can sometimes backfire and actually lead to more of this kind of discrimination.
Yeah, because if employers can't ask about criminal history, they might just assume that certain groups are more likely to have it and avoid hiring them altogether.
Exactly. It's a complex issue with no easy solutions.
That's for sure. So we've got market forces, government policies, individual choices, societal biases, all these things tangled up in this web of earnings and discrimination. It's a lot to unpack.
It is. But understanding these complexities is the first step toward creating a more just and equitable system.
Well said. And we're just getting started. We'll be back in the next part of our deep dive to explore the role of individual choices and societal norms in shaping earnings outcomes. Stay tuned.
Wow, so last time we left off talking about some pretty intense stuff, like how even things like a person's name can affect their chances of getting a job. It really highlights the fact that discrimination can be so subtle, sometimes we don't even realize it's happening.
And then there are those tricky policies, like ban the box, that aim to help, but might actually backfire.
It's a reminder that we have to think carefully about the unintended consequences of even the best intentions.
Absolutely. But before we get too bogged down in the doom and gloom, we should remember that we also talked about how market forces can sometimes work against discrimination.
Right. The idea that the profit motive can actually incentivize businesses to be more inclusive.
That was a pretty fascinating concept. But it's not a guaranteed fix, is it? Like you said, there are those real-world complications that can get in the way.
Yeah, like if customers themselves have biases, mm-hmm. or if the government implements policies that actually support discrimination. It happens.
It's complicated. But on top of all that, we also need to think about the choices individuals make, right? Even in a perfectly fair system, people are going to make different decisions based on their own values and priorities, which can lead to different outcomes.
Absolutely. Maybe someone chooses a job that's more fulfilling, even if it pays less. Or maybe they prioritize family time over career advancement.
I've seen that happen a lot. Sometimes life throws you curveballs, and you have to make tough choices based on your individual circumstances.
Exactly. And that's something the textbook kind of implies, but doesn't directly address the idea that our individual preferences and circumstances play a big role in our earnings potential.
Yeah, like, are some people just born to be high earners? Or is it more about the environment they grew up in, the opportunities they had?
That age-old nature versus nurture debate. And honestly, it's probably a bit of both.
A bit of both, yeah. But the point is, even if we could magically wave a wand and create a perfectly fair system where everyone had equal opportunities,
people would still make different choices based on their own values and priorities, and those choices would naturally lead to a range of different earnings.
So it's not about everyone earning the same amount. It's about ensuring everyone has a fair shot at success, whatever that means for them.
Exactly. It's about leveling the playing field. So those differences in outcome are truly a reflection of individual choices, not systemic barriers or prejudice.
Makes sense. And that brings us back to Noah Smith's argument about the importance of investing in education, especially for those who haven't had the same advantages.
Right. He's not just talking about boosting individual earnings. He's talking about strengthening society as a whole.
Yeah, I remember he made this really interesting point about how education can actually help reduce crime rates. It's not that educated people are morally superior or anything. It's that they have more opportunities.
They have more options, higher earning potential, so there's less incentive to engage in criminal activity. It just makes sense.
It does. And a more educated workforce also means higher productivity, which is good for everyone. Businesses, investors, the entire economy benefits.
Exactly. It's like investing in people pays dividends for society as a whole.
It's a win-win. But Smith also acknowledges that just throwing money at education isn't enough. We need to make sure that money's being used effectively to actually improve the quality of education.
Absolutely. He's a big advocate for things like school choice and charter schools because he sees them as a way to drive innovation and give parents more options, especially for kids who are stuck in failing schools.
So it's not about choosing between more funding or reform. We need both. We need to support increased funding and push for changes that make the system more efficient and responsive to the needs of students and communities.
Couldn't agree more. And it's important to remember that education is just one piece of this complex puzzle. There are lots of other policy areas that can help address income inequality and create a more just system.
Like what? What are some other things we could be doing?
Well, affordable childcare is a huge one. If parents can't afford quality childcare, they're forced to either leave the workforce or cut back on their hours, which can have a major impact on their future earnings.
Yeah, they lose income in the present and miss out on potential career growth down the line. It's tough.
It is. And it disproportionately affects women, who are often the primary caregivers in their families. Having access to affordable childcare would not only be good for families, but it would also benefit the economy as a whole by allowing more people to participate in the workforce.
Right. It frees up parents to pursue their careers and contribute their talents and skills to society. It's a win-win.
Exactly. And another policy area that's getting a lot of attention is paid family leave.
Yeah, the U.S. is one of the few developed countries that doesn't guarantee paid time off for new parents or people who need to care for a sick family member.
It's true. And it puts a lot of pressure on families, especially those who are already struggling to make ends meet. Imagine having to choose between taking care of your newborn baby or keeping your job.
It's a choice no one should have to make. And again, it often falls disproportionately on women, further hindering their career advancement.
That's why paid family leave is so crucial. It supports families, promotes gender equality, and ultimately strengthens the workforce.
So affordable childcare, paid family leave, those are two big ones. What else is being discussed?
There's also a lot of talk about raising the minimum wage, expanding access to affordable health care, and investing in job training programs, especially for people who have been displaced by automation or whose jobs have gone overseas.
Yeah, globalization and automation are changing the job market so rapidly, it's tough for people to keep up.
Right. We need to equip people with the skills they need to thrive in this new economy. And that means investing in training and education that's relevant to the jobs of today and tomorrow.
It seems like there are a lot of good ideas out there, but I imagine actually implementing these policies is a whole other challenge.
It is. It's always a balancing act, weighing the potential benefits against the potential costs and unintended consequences. And then there's the political reality of actually getting these things passed into law. It's a complex process.
It can feel a little overwhelming sometimes. Like, can one person really make a difference in such a big, complex system?
I hear you. But remember, change starts with awareness. Having these conversations, challenging our own biases, educating ourselves and others, these are all important steps in the right direction.
It's true. Even small actions can ripple outwards and create positive change. But speaking of education, there's one more piece of this earnings puzzle we need to unpack.
Oh, yeah. We touched on it earlier, but we need to dig deeper into this whole college degree thing. Is it still the golden ticket to a good job and a secure future? Or is it becoming less relevant in this new economy?
Those are the questions everyone's asking. And that's exactly what we'll be exploring in the final part of our deep dive. So stick with us. Okay, so we've talked about a lot of different factors that affect earnings, but I think there's one big question that's on a lot of people's minds these days.
Yeah, the whole college degree thing.
Exactly. Is it still worth it? Like, the cost of college going up and up.
And all the talk about the jobs of the future, right?
Right. Like, are those 4 years and all that tuition money really going to pay off?
It's a valid question. And it's even more complicated when you consider that whole signaling theory we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah. The idea that a college degree might be more about signaling your abilities than actually making you more productive.
Exactly. Think about it. Some jobs definitely need specific skills you learn in college, like, you know, if you want to be a doctor or an engineer.
Right. Those are pretty specialized fields.
But what about all those more general degrees, like liberal arts? What are those signaling to employers?
Yeah, good question. Is it critical thinking skills? Communication, sure. Just a general level of intelligence.
Could be any of those things, or maybe all of them combined. The point is, for some employers, that piece of paper, the degree itself, might be more important than what you actually learned in school.
So it's like a stamp of approval, basically.
Kind of. It shows you can commit to something, meet deadlines, work in an academic setting. Those are all valuable skills, even if they're not directly related to the job you're applying for.
It's like that old joke, the most useful thing you learn in college is how to order pizza at 3 a.m.
Exactly. But maybe that's what employers are really looking for, proof that you can stick with something tough and finish it.
Right.
Like, you know, college is basically a giant, expensive IQ test.
Wow, I never thought of it that way. But if that's true, it has some pretty big implications for education policy, doesn't it?
It does. If the main benefit of college is signaling, then just pushing more people to get degrees might not actually solve the problem.
Because if everyone has a degree, it's no longer a signal.
Right, exactly. It loses its value.
So this is where people start talking about vocational training and apprenticeships.
Right. Give people the specific skills they need for jobs that are in high demand, rather than pushing everyone down this one-size-fits-all college path.
That makes sense, especially for those more hands-on technical fields.
But we shouldn't dismiss the value of a college education altogether either.
Right. There's more to it than just getting a job.
Absolutely. Those critical thinking skills, communication skills, the exposure to different perspectives, those are all important.
It's about learning how to learn, how to think for yourself, how to navigate a world that's constantly changing.
Those are skills that you can use in any job, in any aspect of life.
And we can't forget about the social and networking aspects of college either. It's a time to meet people from all walks of life, explore new ideas, figure out who you are and what you want to do.
Those connections can be incredibly valuable, both personally and professionally, for years to come.
So, yeah, it's complicated.
It is. There's no easy answer.
It seems like the takeaway is that you need to be really intentional about your choices.
Think carefully about your goals, your interests, your strengths. What kind of education or training is going to help you achieve those goals?
And this is where good guidance and mentorship can make such a huge difference.
Especially for young people who are trying to make those big decisions about their future. They need reliable information and support to navigate this increasingly complex world.
Absolutely. It's about making sure everyone has access to the resources and opportunities they need to succeed, regardless of their background or circumstances.
Exactly. And that brings us back to the bigger picture. We've spent all this time unpacking the different factors that contribute to earnings, differences, market forces, government policies, societal biases, even luck.
And individual choices.
Right. And we've seen how all these things are interconnected, how they all play a role in shaping the world we live in.
It can feel overwhelming at times, like these issues are just too big and complex for any one person to make a difference.
But awareness is a powerful thing. Understanding how these systems work is the first step towards changing them.
And having those tough conversations, challenging our own assumptions, pushing for policies that promote equality and opportunity.
Those are all important steps. And remember, economics can help us understand why things are the way they are, but it doesn't tell us what's fair or just...
The textbook actually ends with that very question. Economics can explain why some people earn more than others, but it can't tell us whether those differences are morally justifiable. So what do you think?
That's a big question. And honestly, I don't think there's a simple answer. But having a solid understanding of how these systems work is crucial if we want to have productive conversations about creating a more just and equitable world.
That's a great point. And that's what we've tried to do in this deep dive, to give you the knowledge and tools you need to think critically about these issues and engage in those conversations.
And hopefully to inspire you to keep learning and keep pushing for a better future.
Absolutely. So keep asking those tough questions, keep challenging the status quo, and keep fighting for a world where everyone has a fair shot at success. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.